And welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio and Your Money, Your Matters. And we are certainly glad you are with us again on another fine Tuesday. Wherever you may be on this side or that side of the international dateline, on this side or that side of Greenwich Meridian time, we really don't care because we're broadcasting not on the air, but we're broadcasting across the internet to bring you solutions to your money and your matters and whatever you want to talk to us about. You can give us a call at 646-929-1020. That's 646-929-1020. And you can just join all of us as soon as you would like to, or you can get on the chat window. The chat window is open, so you can spend some time chatting with us. If you don't want to be on the radio, that's okay. We understand that. There's a lot of people that do and a lot of people that don't. And so we're certainly glad when you join us. Todd Mark has just joined us as well, so welcome. And you look better out of the sling than you did in the sling.
Yes, you want to see growth.
It looks like a tattoo.
That's exactly what I did. I was going to my 25th high school reunion. Mm-hmm. I decided to get a tattoo that looks like
a giant bruise.
Yes. So that way I can always have those incredible memories for the rest of my life to look down at. So there you go. So I was a little shorthanded this morning. Anyway, so good to see you. It's been several weeks since I've been able to participate. I know we've had Jenny Stewart from CCCS of Greater Dallas to fill in my stead. But Rick, it's Guys Day here.
It's Guys Day. That's absolutely correct. We don't know. We know where one lady is, and we don't know where the other lady is.
Yeah.
We believe that Courtney Moran, who is with us from Consumer Credit Counseling,
did we hire her?
Yeah,
oh,
you did. the Cornerstone Credit Union Foundation, we believe that she's in a meeting. They're getting ready for the annual meetings or the board of directors meetings, which are up in
Washington, D.C., which is where I was just at.
Actually, they're
Alexandria, Virginia?
No. Oklahoma City, I believe, is where the...
Well, she's tagging pictures from D.C. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, well, I thought that she was at the board meetings that are taking place up in Oklahoma City tomorrow and Thursday and Friday.
Maybe it was some sort of the annual credit union conference?
I don't know.
Anyway, I just look on Facebook. And you know what? I got a sweet message last night on Facebook from one Linda Webb-Mignon, our longtime partner.
Who has left.
Who has left the building. Like Elvis has left the building.
Yep.
And she said that she was a little teary-eyed. And I said, if you get bored tomorrow, you can always call in at 646-929-1020. I said, you can join the show.
I'm sure she's not going to be bored where she landed.
So she's taken off for different pastures, and we certainly wish her the best and her pursuits. And, you know, when I was thinking about Linda as I was driving over this morning, because we've had a great cast in our first 4.5 years, of which hopefully we've got another 40 years of shows before they retire us out to pasture, as they say. But what's unique is that Linda had a great perspective when it came to her not just personal savings, but the way that she would really balance her budget and her priorities from spending versus long-term savings and investing. And she is probably one of the most frugal people I know, which is funny given that she looks like she's a clothes horse because always well put together. But I can say now with her out of the room that she always impressed me with her dedication toward her long-term goals and really embodied the mission of this show that we try to talk about. You know, this is about how we can impact your purse, your wallet, and if we're talking about you as a consumer, or maybe we're talking to our credit union members of how they can impact their membership. And that really is the mantra every day, why we're called Your Money, Your Matters. Mm-hmm. And finding the things that we're not here to talk about what's the differential between a 401k and a Roth IRA catch-up provisions. We're not accountants on the air here. We're here to have...
Not certified financial planners.
No, we'll play one on the radio from time to time. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea is to take critical foundational basics of money, of finance, of consumer advocacy, and all the areas that money touches people's lives, and make it fun, make it engaging, do this like a morning show format to make it digestible for folks. Because if you're interested in doing this, you would read the Wall Street Journal every day. You would you would sit and look at stock tables and you'd say, all right, well, that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's not our format. But she always made it very relatable because as an everyday Jane, not a Joe,
mm-hmm.
She always put a focus on long-term goals.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as we talk about it in budgeting, she's executed exceptionally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was thinking about that as I was driving in, and then as I was thinking about because she's moved in. Let's
mm-hmm.
face it, what a great sign for the economy if people actually can start finding
yeah. Yeah.
opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Not out of desperation because they've lost a job, but maybe there's additional hiring going on.
You know, and the funny thing about that is I saw that last week, and we see that about once a month when the report that comes out is called JOLTS,
mm-hmm.
JOLTS, which stands for Job Openings, Leaves, Terminations
mm-hmm.
Survey. And really what it is about is how many jobs were open and how many jobs were filled and then how many people quit and how many people were separated, those types of things. And it used to be, first, there weren't any job openings for a period of time. And so there were many more layoffs and terminations than you would see job openings. Now we're seeing, of course, job openings. But a couple of interesting things that have come out of it. The first one that came out of it is, certainly you can, if you look at this report, you realize that there's about 4.5 million people that are employed every month, new hires, and there's about 4.5 million people that leave a job for whatever reason. It might be terminations, it might be separations, it might be that the factory is shutting down for a month, to retool, whatever it might be. But what was interesting in it is that during the recession and shortly after the recession, the quit ratio of that leave termination portion was really small.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's growing. Just as you were saying, people are feeling comfortable now that they realize that, well, maybe with the jobs coming back and with the openings, my skill sets are more valuable. And if they have, maybe they've been in their job for a long period of time, or they just feel like it's time for a change,
sure.
I need to do something different, or whatever it might be, whatever the circumstances are, you see a lot more quits.
You know, Rick, that what we saw during the recession was tremendous wage stagnation.
Yeah.
And I've been very honest, whether at my organization or
mm-hmm.
many others, but many people have gone years. Many years without raises,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't mean that it was merit based, and it's like sorry you didn't earn it. It was
mm-hmm.
simply the reality of finances during the recession.
Yeah,
as times were tight, certainly people stopped hiring, but they also sometimes they had to cut back. It was cutting back on benefits, or it was
mm-hmm.
cutting back on raises, or salary increases, and many people felt, well, that's my lot in life. I'm so lucky and happy to have a job during the recession. Well, two things that occur out of that is obviously that locked people into place with their wages, and as their expenses grow, they would have to rejigger their budget or cut back expenses because their income was not increasing,
mm-hmm.
And it was not increasing to keep up with inflation. What little inflation there was on a lot of consumer products, probably it felt like a lot of inflation if you were looking at health care or cost
mm-hmm.
of going back to college. So many people probably felt that they were in a self-deprivation mode during the recession.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was maintaining their income, it was not on a growth pattern.
Yeah, it wasn't.
And
mm-hmm.
and just as corporations, if you're a publicly held corporation, you have shareholders that are always looking for, that's great, what are you doing for me this quarter? And it's always, you need to continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always like to think of myself as my own corporation, and it's like, all right, if we look back over the last 5 years, has the stock of Todd Mark Incorporated gone up, gone down, am I blacklisted?
What exchange is that on?
Yeah. I do not see it on the Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ, the Russell. Keep looking, folks. Keep looking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny if you think about yourself that way and saying, well, would I be upgraded? Would I be downgraded? Would I be something
mm-hmm.
on the rise? Am I a growth? Am I more security, and protecting my investment rather than growth? So there's ways to look at it like that. But I think you always have to look at your income and your outgo. And many people say, all right, I held even during the recession.
Mm-hmm.
And now that there's starting to be a bit of optimism as we're in recovery, and there are job openings,
mm-hmm.
some people are going to make investments with skill sets that were not necessarily essential but were really valuable to corporations. They're opening those up again. And as you see those opportunities open up, somebody will say, is this the opportunity to play catch-up?
Mm-hmm.
So if you did not get a raise for the last 3 years or the last 5 years, and you see that you can make a job, a salary increase of 15 or 20%,
mm-hmm.
well, that doesn't make up for what you lost over the last 5 years.
That's true.
And remember, salary, kind of like investing, there's a magic of compounding. If you only get 3% increases every year, well, you're getting 3% on top of that 3% in year two, and
mm-hmm.
you're getting 3% on top of the 6% increase. So it always grows exponentially. If you find out you're getting a 3% raise this year, you're saying, yeah, but that doesn't make up for all that I lost.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll never make up those wages unless
no.
you hit the lottery or really get a massive increase from a salary standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people are going to look and saying, all right, I expected my salary to be at this point, you know, from a growth over the last 3 years or 5 years. And if they don't feel the optimism that that's going to occur where they are, sometimes people feel that the best thing is to look externally
mm-hmm.
and see if they can get that reward elsewhere. And oftentimes the corporate world, people will say a shiny new penny is better than the trusted nickel
yeah.
that's in the, you know, and that's
mm-hmm.
sad because that,
mm-hmm.
that trusted nickel has served you well.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can get more money going elsewhere than
you
just
can.
Staying in house.
I think that you can. I think, you know, certainly as people start looking at their careers now,
mm-hmm.
As the job market seems to be improving, I think they take stock in themselves and they really have to take a look at it and determine, what am I really worth? And there are companies that want to keep those individuals, and they have to step forward and do something. I think that, you know, if they wanted to do that and they feel that these people are incredibly valuable and they have the capital to be able to do that, known as cash in the bank, and many corporations hoarded that, by the way,
yeah.
during the recession.
Mm-hmm.
So they have capital in the bank. What they want to do is be able to do something for the individuals that they find very valuable and keep them on by bonuses or other fringe benefits. If you talk to some people, it is training and education that's the most important thing. So cash is not always the most important thing
True.
To people. I mean, there's about 10 things that if you go through them, and I think that the real number is probably somewhere around 7, that are the most important things from a human resources standpoint to pay attention to. And if you pay attention to those 7 things, as far as an individual is concerned, there are 2 or 3 of them that are extremely important to each individual, but they're different for everybody.
Yes.
So you have to balance things. So some people might want to say, well, you know, I have a bachelor's now. I'd like to get a master's.
Mm-hmm.
Could you help me with that?
Mm-hmm.
And that would make them extremely loyal to the company that they are
right.
with and enthusiastic about the company they are with if they help them out with that, because tuition is terribly expensive.
Sure. You know, I was reading this morning from my old mentor and boss, Clark Howard,
mm-hmm.
Reading on his site. They're talking about now is we're entering the season of open enrollment, and depending on your corporation, generally this is done in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So some will do it in October, November, some it'll be December 5th, and they'll say, oh, right, we've got to make all these elections and choices before the
mm-hmm.
first of the year. And, and preparing people, obviously, for what may be the least severe increase we've seen in the last 5 years
mm-hmm.
from overall healthcare costs, but showing the continued trend of employers moving and transferring more of the cost and burden to the employees, whether in the form of monthly payment, deductible, copay, et cetera, but shifting the overall burden. So healthcare benefits are certainly one of those 7, as you talk
mm-hmm.
about. It's never just salary. It may be, as you said, somebody wanting to go to school. It may be somebody who's thinking about family planning, and they're thinking, wow, the insurance that my work is providing me means it's going to be $5,000 or $6,000 to deliver a baby rather than $100 copay on our last insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like the last insurance better. Maybe I got to go find a job where it'll only be $100 to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Some corporations, from their benefit standpoint, we'll be more generous in maybe it was maternity leave, you know, and paid time versus FMLA or unpaid time off. It may be vacation and personal days allotments that are important to folks. It may be the match to 401k. There's so many things. So you're right. I don't think if anybody is looking at their overall value, they're up and down as far as the value of what they're getting from their job. You never just look at the salary. You try to encompass the value of the entire portfolio of benefits that you're receiving. So it's funny, and you know, for the last 4.5 years, we've done this and we've shared very personal things. So I never mind sharing that. You know, I moved here, and this part of what I thought about in messaging with Linda, that when I moved here 7 years ago, Pamela Yip, the Dallas Morning News, did a great. She did a profile on my move from Atlanta to Dallas, and it was not necessarily that let's focus on Todd Mark. It was let's focus on if you're looking not just to switch jobs, but in a relocation, what's the cost benefit analysis? And most people would just say, well, what's the salary? And of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But it wasn't just from my case of comparing salary and the entire benefits package of my old agency, CCCS of Atlanta, and my current agency, CCCS of Dallas. It was looking at the cost of living and taxes, you know, difference of income taxes and property taxes, access to health care, and all of those things as well. And just deciding the overall benefit of moving my family halfway across the country. And so I was very open, and I probably published in the morning news, so I'm not bashful of sharing, but I'd moved for a significant kick up in salary. But it was just as vital that I felt that the benefits were, at the very least, flat. And in some cases, they were much better as far as personal time off with my family and paid vacation. There was a match at the time, and I say at the time because the last several years we have not had a match. But at the time, I thought, wow, well, this is going to be really good, and especially a percentage match, and if you match 3% or if you match 6%, and some will match 1%, some will match 50% of up to 6%, you know, it just depends. But on an increasing salary for me, I thought, wow, that match is going to be just as valuable because I'm socking more away into my retirement. So in a weird way, I have to work less hard to accomplish my goals if I was trying to tap it out. So it was really exciting in doing the cost benefit analysis then. If I had the crystal ball then, of what would happen during the recession, and that was not what would happen in my agency. It would be happening. What's happening across the labor market and at all? I'm sure at Cornerstone and at all of our member credit unions and at financial institutions and at schools and at retail and at every industry, there's been the change of benefit structure when it comes to healthcare and the continued shift of more cost to the employee. There has been a continued shift. Of less and less match, and many people have said, well, more of that burden is going to be on you of covering your retirement in full, as if it wasn't hard enough going from pension to employee-funded IRAs and 401ks. Now it's facing a loss of any match from the employee as well, employer as well. So it's interesting in doing a benefits analysis, not just a cost benefit, but I mean just truly a benefit analysis and saying, all right, did I lose days off? Did I lose value in my health care? Did I lose value in my match? Or maybe the cost of managing my portfolio, it has gone up because they went to a different organization. So you want to take all of this into consideration and looking of are you happy and are you being fairly compensated? And fairly compensated is very subjective. It'll be different to every individual person. But
yeah, it does.
Do you do that on a yearly basis, or you just say, nope, I'm the happiest guy in the world. I try not to look.
Be real candid. It's probably more than on a yearly basis that I look at things now. Certainly in you know my current position, I have lots of things that. You know, I would say stimulate me and keep me going. I haven't been, you know, out knocking on doors or anything, but I have been involved in the community to a great extent, and certainly with the Planning and Zoning Commission in the city of Plano, or really any Planning and Zoning Commission within any city anywhere, whether it's a commission or whether it's the city manager, because it's a small town and, you know, a few cadre that sit around, it's a very rewarding experience to see your city develop in certain areas and in certain ways, and have citizens come forward and talk about what their needs are. What do we need in our community? What would I like to see in our community? What am I doing today where I'm going to another community and I'd like to do it in my community, but we can't? So can we do something to make that change? Those are the types of things that I have found as a personal reward, and it's more of a personal reward. And those are the types of things that I look at. Now, as far as, you know, judging on whether or not, you know, do I feel rewarded or not, I would say that a lot of people do that all the time. I mean, and I shouldn't project that onto a lot of people. I know that I do that probably every 6 months or so.
So smart, by the way.
Yeah, and I just look at it and say, okay, you know, what's my real value? And then what do I want to do? I mean, do I want to go, and I have made this, you know, sort of decision, and this was many years ago, but do I want to go and work for another major corporation? I worked for EDS, and we had 120,000 employees. At one time, I worked for ACS, another Alphabet Soup, you know, basically data processing company. And in that particular one, we had about 70,000 employees at its peak. I went to work for a third company called CTG, another Alphabet Soup company doing the same type of thing. And we had about 5,000 people in that company. What I realized, however, in those companies is even though the positions I had were rewarding and basically near the top, I typically reported to the CEO in most of those. But I found that you got lost in that big structure. Mm-hmm. And I found that what I really liked was something that was much smaller and intimate. And so I made a concert decision some time ago, and I'm going to say it must have been maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. I just decided that, you know, you're getting lost in these big companies. You're just, you know, when you first start out in a career, you're just a cog over here in a corner. And I wanted to make a bigger statement. I wanted to do something that was much more impactful in life. And so I decided I'm not going to work for a large corporation anymore. I'm only going to work for small corporations. And small to me on a definition was under 150 employees. So if it had less than 150, I would enjoy that because I could make impactful statements and do something well for that small or mid-sized company. What I have found here is that it has given me the freedom of doing things that are sort of outside the box, and that is working into the community and going into the community and seeing the type of impact that we can make in the community from a planning standpoint,
right,
a building standpoint. And so I don't get paid for that,
right,
other than, for example, last night when I was at City Hall, and we had a meeting at City Hall, and there were lots of developers that were there. And I started talking with them about what's happening in the housing industry for them, what they're experiencing. And, of course, it's a little bit of a different economy around here in the northern part of Texas than it is in many other areas. But we started talking about single-family buildings, and we talked about multifamily buildings and how is that changing for them. They're seeing, of course, here in the Metroplex, in the northern part of Texas, a lot of growth in single family because a lot of people are moving in to Texas and a lot of people are moving into the northern part of Texas, at least at the current time. And so those families are looking for single family dwellings. Until you get down to the people that are in their 20s, and then all of a sudden it switches over to multifamily, basically apartments, condominiums, those types of things that they are much more attracted to from a couple of standpoints. One, I still have student debt, so they don't want to, they've got to pay off their student debt. and they're feeling that they could rent or lease better than own, because if I go in and try to apply for a mortgage today, they take that student debt and go, you know, with that and with your credit report here, it's probably not feasible that you're going to get what you want. The other part of it is that they are much more mobile, and they want to spend their time doing other things in their community or around their community, then mowing the lawn and trimming the bushes and making sure the fence is stained and all the other things that come along with home ownership.
But you still like doing all those things.
I love doing those things.
Of course
I mean,
you
I do.
Do.
I mean, I you know, basically I think that's the kid coming back out in me because I grew up on a farm.
Sure.
And when you do that, you learn how to milk cows, you know how to clean stalls, you know how to throw hay, and so there's all kinds of things that you learn while you're on a farm, which is you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you work until you're totally exhausted until 10 o'clock at night, and then you crash for about 6 hours, and you get up the next day and do it again. So me going out into the yard and working in the dirt is fine with me. I don't have any problem with that whatsoever.
So in recap, for you, you could find, let's just say you had an offer today for a different job that would keep you in the Metroplex,
mm-hmm.
but it would move you toward Fort Worth,
mm-hmm.
which would suddenly take away your ability to do a lot of the volunteerism and the stuff that you do in the city of Plano.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be that that the job itself, it could pay you more money, it could give you better benefits,
mm-hmm.
but it could not provide you the luxury and the time, as well as just geographically the access,
mm-hmm.
to do the things that you're really passionate about. So that would be a perfect example of other opportunities may come,
mm-hmm.
and it's not just about a benefits package, or it's not just about a starting salary, but it's about how does it integrate into your entire life.
Mm-hmm. I actually had an offer on that type of thing, and I
really?
Said no.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
and it was actually for more money.
Was it really in Fort Worth?
It was over near Fort Worth on the northern part of Fort Worth. And I said, no, I wasn't really interested because of the drive time that I would have to go over there and drive back. And I would basically be stuck in traffic most of the time. And
mm-hmm.
I'm going, no. You know, the next jump that I will make, if there's ever an opportunity, the next jump I will make will probably be a business that's located in the city in which I live.
Either that, or it's in the city in which your daughter lives.
I don't know if I can afford parents in New York City or...
Which is that other tie to what's important to your life beyond work. So your
mm-hmm.
daughter, your family. So
yeah, and that was interesting how people get attached to homes. I know that when I was growing up as a kid, we had sort of a semi-attachment to the home. The home was the nest. We all came back
mm-hmm.
to the nest and everything else. But we really didn't think about it, you know, and I was, I guess, maybe kind of blind, but I really didn't think about it, what it meant to my mom and dad. And then it came to the point where mom and dad decided, hey, you know, we're getting really old and we're going to go and live in an apartment where a lot of other seniors live and we're going to sell the house. And it was like, no, you can't do that. I mean, it was basically kind of taking away all of our childhood or something. I'm not sure what it was. But I have found, you know, I have found that I'm in the same thing. I mean, I'm sitting at home, 3,000 square feet by myself, which is absolutely ridiculous. Most people shouldn't even do that. You know, I would be fine in 1,000 square feet. But it is because my daughter comes home periodically, and she wants to come home.
Right.
And that's home to her.
And if you move to 1,000 square feet, you would still even have another room for her. But it would not be the place that she was raised.
That's absolutely correct.
So it's not. It may be your
mm-hmm.
house, but it would not be her home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so hard. You know, this is kind of the segue into the other thing I wanted to talk about today, which is I learned a lot from a socioeconomic standpoint over the weekend. I went on an emotional journey,
Right.
Home.
You went to that reunion.
I went to my 25th high school
mm-hmm.
reunion, and that's, of course... How, if you ever want to incur great medical bills or great injury and pain, try to lose 25 pounds in the final week before your reunion so you can impress all the people that you cared about impressing 25 years ago.
Here's what it looks like, folks. If you take a whole bunch of raspberries and you squish them down until they're kind of, you know, reddish and purplish muck, and then you take a big glob of them about the size of a softball and you spread it all over your upper arm. That's kind of what it looks like right now.
Yeah. So,
does it hurt if I touch it?
what's funny is I know that the poor Jenny from my staff probably spent good time talking about her own medical things a few weeks ago. So I'm not going to do that today. I know we've talked about saving an insurance for medical, but what was funny is that of course that was one of the things that happens when you go back for a union. I learned a lot, and I was thinking about the lessons that we teach every week on Your Money, Your Matters. And the path that I expected for myself, for certain people that you graduate with. And all of this culminated, the reason why I said this is a perfect segue is because I went to my old home, so a home that we spent 14 years in. I guess it would be 14 years. I spent 12 years in. My family spent 14 years in before they moved back to Chicago. So I went home to Columbus, Ohio. And in Whitehall specifically, and Whitehall is definitely a different place than it was 25 years ago. Some of the news that was burst out while I was there was that Whitehall had the highest crime per capita of any city in the state of Ohio, and you're just like, really? That doesn't seem like the place I remember growing up. So a friend of mine, actually one of my groomsmen, picked me up, and I stayed with him for the weekend. And I said, I want to do a drive-through. And I felt like driving through, not a war zone, but, you know, going through New Orleans post-Katrina and Rita, and you say, what happened?
Yeah.
And the things that shocked me driving through Whitehall, Ohio, were it was completely overtaken by payday lending.
Really?
The two main intersections, Main Street and Hamilton, I counted off 12 different payday lenders, check cashiers, And I didn't see a credit union on our path. I saw one of the few old community banks, Huntington Bank, out of Ohio. I saw one of those, but otherwise didn't see much as far as any sort of mainstream financial institutions. It was payday after payday, and as we went toward what was the old hangout for me, the old mall. This is the mall that's pretty much been abandoned, and there's a few anchors left, but it's much more kiosks and mom and pop than the standard mall fare that you would find there, and really indicative of an economic change in the area as well. And I just thought the closer I get there, the more paydays that I was seeing, and it broke my heart just because being in financial services the last 20 years. That's a great telltale sign of the economic health and viability of a community. Is how are they served financially? And so to me that was a big thing that stuck out. So we did drive by the old home just as you described. So there's no going home. If it had not been so late at night, I probably would have knocked on the door. I think 15 years ago, the last time I was back there. We knocked on the door, and the family said, sure, come on in. And it was very generous, you know. It's probably awkward whenever you're owning a home, you think, this is my home, and you don't think of any previous history or tenants, you know, owners. But I drove by, and I was like, well, our house still looks the same. But it was the upkeep of homes around it, and I thought the neighborhood certainly seems like it's probably taken a hit, property values. I know just from talking to some of our former classmates have not been as robust as we've seen here in Texas, Rick. So I saw, all right, housing costs low, increase in crime, certainly the increase in paydays. And I'm like, it really isn't the place that I remember growing up.
Yeah.
Still some of the people that I know are there. So the next thing I learned from my reunion, I guess I was shocked at from some of the people that I really, I don't want to say I was jealous of, but the people that I really respected, that these are people on a path towards success. People that got better GPAs than I did, or they beat me on the honor rolls, or you know, the end of the year, like, I wish I was one of those being called on stage, and I wasn't, and they were, and I thought those are the ones that are going to really do things. And I was surprised how many ended up not either finishing college or didn't start college. And these are some of those that were in what I consider the gifted and talented program. That's what they call it here in Dallas, which I'm very proud of. My kids are both in, because I always thought, well, this is for college-bound, you know, students. so it was to my dismay when I had a few people just very casually, yeah, I went for a year to Ohio State, and it was too big, and so I got a job and never went back. And
strange that they wouldn't then decide, let me go to a smaller school.
Exactly. And that's what shocked me. And a few of them, they end up on paths, and it doesn't mean that they had bad lives or anything, but certainly education is one of the key paths away from and out of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I've given you this, all right, here's an economic overview of what I've seen of Whitehall. Well, then I say, well, how many people still live in the greater Columbus area?
Mm-hmm.
And then how many people specifically live in Whitehall? And not that Whitehall, not that it's bad for anybody. There's certain folks that will grow up somewhere and they will always stay there, and they'll be the historians, and they will be your future city council members and your mayors as well, by the way. Other people move because they don't give themselves opportunity, or they don't see opportunity outside of what they know, and they stagnate where they are, and all they know are the jobs and the 18 miles, radiating around their house, and that's the world they know. I was surprised how many people I've talked to. I said, most exotic locations you've traveled to, and one of them said Wisconsin, and I thought of you, and I thought that would sound like an insult by saying like that, but to them that was their version of exotic travel, and I just thought that it made me sad that they haven't seen more of the world.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, we choose our paths for success, or we limit our paths for growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I saw is people that may not have seen it themselves, but as an outsider could say, you chose not to continue on a path you were set up for, which may have limited your income, may have limited your opportunity within the workforce, or your ability to move up and grow. And it was shocking. These were people that I thought, they're going to blow me away, or I can't wait to hear the stories of their successes. And not that they had bad lives. And I was really happy to catch up with many of them. It just wasn't what I anticipated or even hoped for them.
Yeah, yeah.
So have you similar experiences? Have you gone back for reunions?
There have been a couple of them that I have gone back. Obviously, being here and growing up in Wisconsin, going to high school and college in Wisconsin, when they have reunions, sometimes I can't make it back for them. Mm-hmm. But I have gone to several. And you're right, there are different experiences all the time. There was an individual I can distinctively remember that I knew. He was always what I would call a risk taker when he was in high school. He didn't go to the same university that I went to, so I didn't know him during the university life. But I asked him how things were going. He was living now out on the West Coast, and he said, there are years that I've made a couple of million. There's years that I've lost a couple of million. Now, he's not what I would call fabulously wealthy by any means. But he's a terrible risk taker. I mean, he really, he'll gamble it. I mean, and it isn't gambling like at cards or dice or Las Vegas or any of that type of thing. But it is business risk, and he's willing to leverage it, I mean, way out to the nth degree. And if it craters, it craters, and he goes, meh, so what, I'll start a new one. And that's not me. That would scare me to death, but he is, he's willing to do that type of thing. There were others that, there was one that I thought, they're never going to do much of anything. I mean, they have no interests and stuff and everything else.
Yeah.
They became a very, very successful financial manager. And they were working in New York and worked in Chicago for a while and those types of things, but became very successful in that. And what was interesting about it is that in high school they had a very close set of friends. In essence, they weren't very extroverted by any means. They weren't the most extroverted in high school.
Mm-hmm.
They were just the opposite. But they ended up knowing people very, very well, enough that they could manage their portfolios very, very well and make themselves in the meantime a fairly sizable commission.
Mm-hmm.
And so they became very successful, and yet they still have a very close set of friends, and then everything else is sort of out in the periphery, and they still are what I would call an introvert to a degree, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, no.
You know, I don't want to say it like it's negative, but there are people, they have a close knit of friends, and that's really what they care about, and that's
sure.
what they want to. But on the same hand, you wouldn't think of them as the type of person that would manage giant financial portfolios and going out and meeting somebody that is, you know, totally probably an extrovert in managing that financial portfolio. But they did. There were the jocks that, you know, were the stars on the football team, the quarterback of the football team or whatever, and they haven't done a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not a thing.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, great personalities and were wonderful people and very extroverted and went out on the, you know, went out on the limb, and I thought, gosh, you know, I'm going to watch this guy in the NFL or whatever it is, and they never did anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it just surprised me.
I want to share a few stories of just profiles, and I could tell you that these are clients that I've educated at CCCS. In this case, it's profiles mm-hmm. of a few people that I met, and it all came back to financial stability and they knowing what I do and their mm-hmm. questions for me, and it was very fascinating. There was one woman, one of those beauty queens that you always said mm-hmm. will never ever have an issue. You know, they'll always be the luckiest of the draws.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman had a 20 and 17 year old child, children,
mm-hmm.
and had just gone through a divorce 3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you could still see that she was shell shocked,
mm-hmm.
Probably for the first time being on that end mm-hmm. that end of it. And you could see that she had a lot of self doubt on her confidence of will I ever meet someone again.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, well, what does this mean to you financially? And she goes, well, he was the breadwinner. She goes, I was working part-time, and she goes, I've just had to go out and get a full-time job in the last 2 months, and it's obviously been a big change for me and getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I had to get an apartment to live in. She goes, that was different and something I had not thought about or had been prepared for. She goes, my 17-year-old, to stay in her school district, has to stay with the dad
mm-hmm.
in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, so there's further burdens of personal grieving of, like, it's not that it was the child chose one parent over the other as much as chose school
mm-hmm.
over not. But she was very hurt by that. So I said, I'm so sorry, you know, from a personal. I said, let me just go through some financial steps. Have you closed out any, I said, the mortgage, it was in both of your names. I said, as part of your divorce, you need to either, you know, have that place sold,
mm-hmm.
or you need to have your interest bought out, you know, and sold off and get your name off the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Said, because years from now, that, you know, that could be a house that goes into delinquency, or your ex misses payments, and you're going through foreclosure along with him, you know. And she was shocked. She goes, I never considered that. I said, let's do a checklist of your automobiles, and she said there was nothing joint there. I said, what about credit cards? And she goes, well, we each took three or four. And I said, the credit card or the debt itself? And she said, well, he's going to absorb the debt. And I said, says who? Did your credit card issuer write you a letter and say, we're so sorry to hear about your separation. We would like to affirm for you that we now only see him as the sole bearer of responsibility with these debts. And we would never, ever contact you if he fell delinquent or was a deadbeat.
Somehow I don't see that.
Yes.
I'm laughing, but somehow I don't see that as an asset.
Exactly. And yet, and she said, she goes, no. She goes, he said he'd take care of it. And I said,
yeah, okay.
You need to resolve this. I said, he's taking care of you too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Nod, wink, wink. And I said, you have to protect yourself here.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was blown away. I said, let's talk about insurance and who's covered on health care.
Mm-hmm.
I said, let's talk about estate planning. I said, you may be listed as each other's beneficiaries on life insurance, or durable power of attorney. And she goes, oh, yes. I said, well, what would happen if tonight after our reunion you had a few too many drinks and you didn't make it home safely, or you got
mm-hmm.
conked on the head and you end up in the hospital, and the only person that could decide your treatment at that point was an ex who may already be remarried or, you know, or who could wish you bad things, and suddenly they're in a position to do bad things, and it really freaks her out. But I said, well, I'm not. That's not my goal. But I said, you need to think about this separate from all of the personal pain, just from a financial standpoint. What are the ramifications and consequences, and how you move forward with to a point of stability? So, I told her, I said, well, we teach CCCS of Greater Dallas. We teach dealing with divorce. I said, I do that personally. And I said, we've done this as a radio topic several times. So anyway, so I directed her there. Second profile was of somebody who proudly served our country in the military and served during Desert Storm, has not integrated well into the workforce post-military career, as we know has so often happened. And I remember when we had our military protection or appreciation day, what was it, a month ago or so that we did?
It was military appreciation day.
So, and talking about that so much, and it made me think of you, Rick, and I wish I had you by my side to kind of talk to this man. But he shared with me about the home that he was renting for the last year, and he was really upset that his rent was going up from $650 to $700. And, of course, nobody wants to see their rent go up. But my first thought was, wow, that's really on the affordable side.
Yeah, it's about 8% somewhere.
Yeah. No, but I'm saying affordable as far as the overall cost of housing. And then he said, well, he goes, we had a real tough situation with the housing. He goes, so our landlord started showing this to other people. And he goes, they can't kick us out, can they? I said, well, you've got a lease in place. You're good. And it's guaranteed until the end of the lease. And he goes, well, does it count if they go into foreclosure? Because we've had several people come through and said that your home is going up on the auction block. He goes, we didn't do anything wrong. And I said, well, you're the renter. And I said, the owner has obviously let that go.
Yeah.
And I said, did they talk about with you, buying it directly from them, you know, or assuming a mortgage or whatever? And he did not have the credit to qualify. Now, I've just told you what the rent was, and that probably covered all the taxes and insurance. Do you want to venture how much this home was selling for?
It's in foreclosure?
Yeah.
Knowing what the housing market is, but this is northern Illinois, Ohio, I'm going to say it probably is somewhere in the, 90,000 range?
So this man had an offer to buy the house straight up for $55,000. He didn't have the income or the credit to qualify for
$55,000.
The landlord couldn't finance it anymore either and let it go to foreclosure. And someone swooped in and bought this person's house for $22,000.
Oh.
Now, I said to them, I said, you're paying $700 a month. I mean, I want you to think about that. $8,400 a year, you know, if you could finance it, that's less than 3 years of payments. And you could have had the house. And he goes, you don't understand. We're not in a position to even get a mortgage for $22,000.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, of course, it's not like we were going out there on the courthouse steps to see what it was selling for. But he goes, that was where they were. And that was the severity of I would truly call them the working poor, living it below poverty level, and it made me sad.
Probably payday to payday.
Paycheck to paycheck. It broke my heart because as we talked a little bit about that, and I thought, well, that's a car payment for some, and I don't mean a monthly, but I mean say. $22,000 is more than I spent on my last car.
It is more than I spent on my Jeep too.
Yeah, and yet this person did not have the capacity from an income or savings or credit to be able to borrow to buy that. And now so now they've said they've been offered to have their lease extended. And I said, I bet the landlord's going to be happy to extend the lease.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That's going to be a cash cow for them. I said, ideally, though, you don't stay in a rental you know, you position yourself to grow your income, to build up a down payment,
mm-hmm.
build your credit, where you could be buying something similar, because if in that area where you live housing prices are so depressed, you know, that's a great path toward asset building for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave them some steps. So the third profile of somebody that was very surprising, again, somebody who I had great, immense respect for intellectually, and it doesn't mean that they made wrong choices, but I was surprised that they ended up not going, they chose not to go to school, and they got in a relationship very early on in life and got married at 20, which is honestly not all that uncommon. I got married at 23.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was unique is she married somebody that was more than twice her age at that point. And which, by the way, I see nothing wrong with in the overall,
mm-hmm.
and love should know no boundaries, and
mm-hmm.
demographics or race, creed, color, and age. I mean, if you know, ideally you find a soulmate, you find a soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'd wondered with her, and I didn't want to go too far in because I didn't want to seem judgmental, is I thought, gosh, us guys have a hard enough time keeping up with our women as far as life expectancy.
Mm-hmm.
And she started off with a 22-year deficit to her husband, and I thought, gosh, have you thought from an end game? You know, and I didn't use these words, but my thoughts were, gosh, she's probably going to be widowed very young,
mm-hmm.
and may be in the midst or the later parts of her working career,
mm-hmm.
at a point where you know, and she could lose her husband, who had done a lot of living and had other kids with others,
mm-hmm.
so it was not necessarily built up where she's like she got a sugar daddy or anything like
mm-hmm.
this. So it's like she could be left on her own and really to fend for herself financially,
yeah.
later on. So it was not anything at all about what may be looked at as a very sweet
mm-hmm.
love affair between two people, but I question on that financially and how you know, mm-hmm. if she'd prepared, if she'd thought, you know, at a certain point, you know, with, you know, she counting on remarrying,
mm-hmm.
you know, and finding somebody to live out the back half with her, if you know, and it's not like her husband was ill or, you know, ready
mm-hmm.
to fall over. 66
mm-hmm.
is still pretty I'd say a lot of years to live,
mm-hmm.
left to live.
Yeah.
If we all project to live to be 100, well, then mm-hmm. there's still lots of good time.
Although,
there.
Although, you know, there's another story of a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he was my best friend when I was in high school. We both went to the same college. We both went to the same fraternity. We grew up together, basically. Got to know each other when we were about 4 or 5 because he lived a few houses down the block. And so when you got to be about 4 or 5, you're out riding your bike and you run into people. But as the story goes, and it's similar to what you were just relating, he didn't get married until he was about 40. And that was the first time that he found someone that he really wanted to consider marriage. So he didn't get married until he was 40. And she was 20. And so there was that 20-year difference
mm-hmm.
between the two. Another 5-10 years go by, and they decide, you know, we really need to have children. Now he's about 48 when they
mm-hmm.
had the first child. They had 3 kids, and so all of them are fairly young now. I mean, she's in her getting into her 30s at that point in time. The kids come along, so they're trailing behind in about 15 years. When he turned 64, he died.
Mm.
And it was, you know, very sudden and very sad. Now she's 45, and all the kids are still in high school and middle school.
Yeah.
He was the breadwinner of the family. She decided that she wanted to stay at home and take care of the kids. That's the way they had planned it out. So he was the breadwinner of the family. The fortunate part of the story is that he was actually a practicing attorney who determined that he did not enjoy the type of law that he was in. And the type of law that he was in was basically defense criminal cases. He went into estate planning, became an attorney for estate planning,
mm-hmm.
and planned his, at least planned his estate very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Had he not done that, she probably would have lost everything.
Wow.
Because they were counting certainly on his income. At 63, 64, now he owned the practice. He was the senior partner in there, so that he was receiving the benefits of growing the firm. And she, the house still had a mortgage on it. They still had cars. They, cars for the kids in high school. So they, although they lived frugally, they still had bills that were coming in. And with the sudden death, that all ended. So she had to recover from that position, and she's still recovering. This was only about maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, and so she's still recovering from that. From that position.
Well, I'm hoping that that this friend would have that her husband is just as savvy, and from a and by the way, I hope they live together happily for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a sign of impending doom, but just as your friend showed, there's no guarantees.
There's no guarantee.
Mm-hmm. And and of course, having seen members of my family that have passed away in the 60s, and as she said, it's like, wow, that's That it's just an interesting conundrum. Is she also had a 21 and a 17-year-old, and it was just fascinating from a financial standpoint. Nothing else. So it was really unique to look at, and those are just three of many. But the choices, and sometimes the choices that we see as our only options based on where we live, how we choose to expand, or what we do after high school, and, which gives you, if you pursue from an educational standpoint, the access of opportunity. But it was really unique, and I've thought about writing something without being too personal of the others, but just lessons learned of looking back, and if I knew this, or if they knew this back then, what they would do to change.
Mm-hmm.
So some great lessons, just as far as our show. So obviously the lessons are never get divorced. I'm teasing. I'm teasing. Obviously we've talked about that quite a bit on our show. But seriously, life is what happens once you make your plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always having that contingency to be prepared for what's next.
Yeah, and you're right. You need that contingency, and you really never know what's going to take place. And it could be a contingency on anything. It could be a contingency that the business isn't doing well that you're working at, and all of a sudden they decide they're going to cut back. And part of the cutback is that they're going to remove a division. They're going to remove a set of people. That's typically the largest expense.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, through no fault of your own, the economy changes, the business is doing poorly, and you're out in the street looking for a job. That's a horrible situation.
Yeah.
But people do that all the time.
Well, it was we've managed to make it through our first show officially without one of our longtime members. It's going to be testosterone filled. Maybe we'll change our cast makeup a little bit to make it
We might change it up a little bit, and then people will join us and dial in and do all those crazy things with us. So, we will see what happens. But we certainly are glad that you have joined us again on Your Money, Your Matters. It was a great Tuesday to spend time with you, and we hope that your Tuesday is absolutely great, or Wednesday, wherever you may be on the other side of the international dateline. And join us again in 1 week on Your Money, Your Matters on Blog Talk Radio.
Deceived you, my friend.